podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Place to Be Nation, welcome back to PTBN's NBA Team Podcast. I'm glad to be joining everybody here at the Place to Be Nation. And thank you for everybody throughout this year who's been listening to us, because this will be probably our last one of the year. We might be able to sneak one in after the Christmas Day games. But if not, I'm glad that we had another year to rack up for the show and for all those people that have listened and been with us through thick and thin. You know, we really appreciate it. We hope we have new listeners as we go along. My name is Andrew Reich. I'm a co-host, and I'm joined by my other co-host, Mr. Adam Murray. And I think this is actually, if you count the fact that 2014 was our first year that we started, even though it was late in the year, this is the fourth year that we're doing this Christmas Day show.
This is our senior year here.
Well, is this like 90210 where they have to go to college now, but it doesn't feel as like the ratings start to go down?
Yeah, this will be the same by the new bell, the college years. We'll get three episodes in and be like, no, it's not too good.
But that was different because they did the new class where they had Belding but they had a whole new slate of people that nobody really gravitated to, but they brought back. Wasn't Screech like an assistant principal?
Oh, the new class? Yes, he was. Yes.
Yeah, there's a couple of them that were from the new class cast that I remember wound up doing other things, but not nearly to the level of like the pop culture like embrace that the original Saved by the Bell had.
Okay, here's just a random pop quiz that you may or may not know. That means absolutely nothing to any of our five listeners. What episode number is this? What do you think?
I want to say 145.
No, 137.
Well, it was close.
We made it 100, which I think nobody expected us to, and you know, we're doing good.
But isn't 137 the room number in The Shining? I know there's not a lot of movie buffs out there that listen to the show, but I would definitely recommend. There is a documentary about this obsession with Stanley Kubrick's The Shining, and it's called 237. So we got another 100 episodes to go.
Oh, good.
So we need to get to 100 more episodes, then we could just finish this up so that we can get to use that comparison. But no, it's this is going to be the fourth Christmas episode. We always do our yearly like giving out of the gifts. We have a lot of variety this year, some that we've never used before. Trying to get creative. Yes, we do prepare for these shows, even though it's like contrary to popular belief for the like what the 75 listeners, the 80 listeners that click on us every day.
I'm surprised anybody does sometimes. But we do thank all the bots and all the auto downloads that do go. So.
Yeah, for all the people that do tap, they get on their phone and listen to it, or they they're at their office cubicle and they're bored and they just want to catch in on some NBA goings on. Very glad to have y'all listen to us and just trying to keep the numbers up. Give us a review if you want. I know we're on the pop feed, but any review for that feed would be good because it helps. If it's a positive one, it helps out all the other shows that are affiliated with that feed. So
look, it's okay. We don't care if you clicked on Geek and Sassy or you're listening to Go Home in a Box and just happened to stumble upon this. Just say, hey, we heard it. We're good. It's fine.
Yeah, but now we're in our senior year. Unlike we weren't one and done, unfortunately. That option's not going to be available anymore from what the sound of it is. But it has been a good 4 years.
It's been surprisingly fun.
The Christmas slate. Now, we talk about this every single year when it comes around. If you go into all the Christmas Day shows that we did, it seems like almost a rhetorical type of like debate that between you and I. But it's always a fascinating topic. Now that the season starts so early, starts like in the middle of October instead of right around Halloween, does it feel like you still get that sense that the Christmas Day slate is like the true beginning of the season in terms of like relevance in the sports world? Or do you feel like Christmas Day, by the time we get to the Christmas Day games, you're already about I want to say about 40 games in, at least halfway through, that if you're kind of already in that mode already of like, okay, I know what the season's about.
I thought so, but now, you know, Christmas used to be, okay, now is the time of getting serious, let's lock down everything, but now we're already there. We already know what teams are panicking, what teams are poised to make a move. We've already had trades, so it's sort of old news this year.
But do you feel like that early start under the new CBA has caused any kind of like change in your perception of what the Christmas Day games represent? Not just the fact that it's really there, that's the NBA's day. It's one of those universal things where college basketball, college football, even the NFL, they all kind of like back away and they know, okay, this is the NBA's little time to shine.
Yeah. Yeah, it is, I like how all the other leagues sort of play nice and, you know, give them the space. And the NBA does the same for other leagues.
Yeah, but for example, Christmas Eve, which is a Sunday this year, no NBA games at all. None. So you get a little bit of a day off, do your gifts for the family, if you're the players and the coaches and such, and then get to work on Christmas Day.
Yep, and that's it's one of those, well, you don't want to play Christmas Day, but if you're not there, your team sucks and nobody cares about you, so.
But yeah. If you're playing on Christmas Day, unless you're a West Coast team that they just had to put that slot in on TNT, sorry, Lakers, that means that you're probably a good team also. That means you're a marquee opponent, you have some kind of, like, sexy type of allure to you that viewers want to watch, and that's why that you got that time slot. So it's a bit rewarding at the same time.
Yeah, there's enough for the entire day for those in the West Coast to get their Lakers, and you know, that's the only disappointing thing is, you know, oh, we have to put the Lakers on, we have to put the Knicks on. Well, yeah, but both those teams have been terrible. Why? They don't deserve to be on there.
The Knicks, you know, we could just jump into the games because there's only five. The Knicks have actually been pretty good. If they're going to play the Sixers at Madison Square Garden on noon Eastern on ESPN, that's the only ESPN game of that Christmas Day slate. They actually have a better record than the Sixers. Now, the Sixers are 14-14. They're trying to figure it out. The Knicks are 16-13. We just had that weird game where Carmelo Anthony had his return game at the Garden. We'll talk later about that return, the whole trend of return games, which just makes me want to throw up in my mouth a little bit. But the Knicks won that game. Porzingis has been good, even though he's had to step out a couple of times with some – what would you call it? Just a sore knee or just take the day off type of thing?
Yeah.
But 16-13, very competitive. The Tim Hardaway Jr. injury is alarming, but they're still being competitive. Is there anything in that particular game, the Sixers-Knicks game, that you're keeping an eye on? I know a lot of people are really gung-ho about watching the Sixers just based on entertainment value rather than just, you know, not even including the fact that they've actually been competitive, but that they've been good games to watch.
Well, I don't want to say it took the Knicks like 2 months to realize Michael Beasley's just going to score you 20 points.
Mm-hmm.
Like, remember, they buried him at the beginning, and it was, well, we got to give Doug McDermott his time, and then all of a sudden, well, like, well, he's really not that good, and, oh, well, okay, here's Beasley, and, oh, he's just going to just score buckets.
Yeah, well, he's a microwave. He's almost like a microwave. Like, that's sort of his gimmick now.
It'll just be, you know, it's just to get the national, the first game, okay, you open your gifts, okay, who is this Embiid and Simmons? Let's just introduce the country to them.
Embiid is like very entertaining across the board, like just on the court, you know, he's an embattling person, social media, he's probably one of the best, he might be the best social media guy that the NBA has, like in terms of like being able to troll people and getting a nice slide in a decent comment, not DMs. I don't know how many DMs. You think he slides in a lot of DMs? You think he's one of those that just like goes rampant on his phone?
I don't know, and you know that's more for the kids.
Ben Simmons has been spectacular. I mean, we're not going to even do awards debates this time, but Rookie of the Year is like that's wrapped up, isn't it?
Oh, I'm sick of reading the articles. Donovan Mitchell's making a run at it. This rookie is good. No, it's Ben Simmons in a light year. Yeah, you know Mitchell would be Rookie of the Year.
He had that crazy. Was it a 41-point game?
Yeah.
Against the Pelicans, I think it was.
He would be Rookie of the Year if it weren't for Tatum. If it weren't for Tatum, you have Simmons. Simmons is just you know, light years ahead of both of them combined. It's just not funny.
Yeah, I mean, he's very – I mean, did you get to watch the triple overtime game between the Sixers and the Thunder on ESPN?
No.
That was one that sort of picked up at the end. I mean, Russell Westbrook, you know, he did his Russ thing where, you know how, even with Paul George and Carmelo Anthony in the fold, he gets into that mode where he feels like the offense is, because the offense with the Thunder has been just pitiful, even with those three stars, that when the offense is not picking up and he doesn't feel like his teammates can pick him up, Russell goes back into Russ mode. He like tries to take everything over, and that's what he did in the game. And some spectacular dunks and a lot of really nifty plays by Russ. And then the Sixers would just kind of climb back into it. The Thunder wound up, you know, getting the win out of there. But, man, I mean, I just enjoy watching the Sixers more than I enjoy watching the Thunder. The Thunder are more on a dysfunctional level type of entertaining, whereas the Sixers, I actually do like them. I question Brett Brown as a coach. Like, I'm at a point now with Brett Brown where I don't think it's going to work. Like, I think they need to find a legitimately good coach.
Well, again, the thing that the team is so young and have no definitive – there's no real rotation. It's just we're going to hang all our everything on these two kids, and then, well, what's the rest? Well, what's Sarge doing? Sarge hasn't really done anything. You've given what's his name, that $60 million deal?
Robert Covington.
Covington, yes.
Yeah.
You have J.J. Redick, who's taking all these shots, but he's a one-year rental, and for a one-year rental, I don't think they should be, you know, riding him so much.
Yeah, they do play him a lot of minutes. I noticed that, too.
You have Timothy Luwawu, and you have Furkan Korkmaz, both shooting guards. Nope. J.J. Redick's getting all your minutes, but he's a one-year...
You shipped out Nystauskas, because that broke the rule. You can't have two white shooters on those teams.
You know, so it's, yeah, Brett Brown, he's not, we already said he's, you know, he's getting the benefit of the doubt now, but now he has to prove it. And once crunch time comes and then teams start playing back when it matters, it'll be a different game.
You know, I always go back to PJ Carlissimo with the Thunder when I think about Brett Brown. And I remember a lot of people were worried when Carlissimo was fired, because he was fired literally like a month after the Oklahoma City Thunder and they had moved over there. And about a month into the year, they were awful. Russell Westbrook was a rookie. It was Durant's second year. And they fired Carlissimo a month in, and they put in Scottie Brooks. And a lot of people just didn't like that decision because they thought it was too rash. And the truth was, I think Clay Bennett listened to the players and knew that Carlissimo not only just didn't have a good like idea of what the team needed to be in the future, but at least it was forward thinking enough to know, okay, we need to make a change sooner than later. It's like that Patriots rule with Belichick. You always want to get rid of a player a year too early than a year too late. And I feel like with Brett Brown, I think the firing might come a year too late.
Well, don't forget, with Brett Brown, the process was year one, Noel, year two, or, year two injury, year three, Okafor. So if you trade, look at all they gotten back for the process, as I mentioned in all the episodes.
Between Hickey and Colangelo.
Just on
the
GM, the GM's just trying to.
Yeah, the results from the trades,
what are you putting around
the past,
not so great.
So
far.
But it's just one of those things where, you know, you're finally reaping in the benefits. And they are getting – they are markedly better than they were in the past. I mean, my God, they're 500. Like, if you told me the Sixers would be 500 at Christmas time in the previous four seasons, I would have laughed at your face. But is it selfish to think they could be better with this one? With this one right now?
With this team or the hypothetical –
like the Rockets game where Gordon hit the corner three, and then that Thunder game we just talked about, those kinds of games.
But
would it be an overreaction to let Brown go?
Young players
start to kind of go sideways. They go 10 games under.
Not if you could bring in a good coach. If you just fire him because you have unrealistic expectations, and then all of a sudden, you know, you bring in somebody who sucks equally, and it's just another, you know, oh, he's been a rehire from 20 places. But if you get, you know, somebody who's, I can't think of any names off the top of my head, but somebody
I mean, there's a few we could think of, pushing
the next level.
There's so much in the recite, like Fred Hoiberg. I don't know. The Bulls are actually kind of picking things back up now that, you know, Nick Lemiritich and Bobby Portis have embraced the power of love. Is that the right way to say it? Is it just Mirotić, or do you think there's more to it? Like,
they,
Chris Dunn's playing a little bit more,
well,
and playing better now that he's learning to be an NBA player. Is there something more to it, or is it just a hiccup in the system where they win a few games, they win this pocket of games, and they kind of go back into, you know, like a 5-10 run after this? And
Well, it's just teams are taking that night off.
So you're saying the Bulls are not
they're not
than
trying
the
hard, so it doesn't, you know, the Bulls come in and sneak one out.
Well,
the Bulls by default they are, and well, who
yeah, get
the
that, get
so
that
the
Darwin,
are,
Darwinism
know,
shit out of my face.
The Hawks are better than the Celtics.
Darwin
and
effect
everybody
in the NBA does not work. It never has. It never will. But no, I mean the Bulls have been winning games. They've actually played some teams at full strength and beaten them in the past couple of days. So good for them, undefeated I think so far under Nikola Mirotic, unless I missed a game that they lost recently. Is Mirotic just that good?
No, he's just the freshest right now.
Yeah.
Don't forget, all these players
but
have
to
20,
just
30
jump
games
on Sixers
under him. He's
at
coming
the end.
In day one.
Porzingis and
in
Simmons,
shape.
would you put him one-on-one, or do you think that with Ben doing that point-forward stuff that it might be better to put like a slightly smaller guy on Ben and not waste Porzingis' energy?
No, they're not going to.
The Knicks
they're
do have a
Porzingis
decent,
will be on
like,
Embiid
glut of big
because
men,
neither
though.
Want to rebound
so
or really do dirty work anymore.
On,
Embiid.
Know.
Yeah. Yeah, but it doesn't.
Cavaliers Warriors is actually in the
Porzingis
3
play,
p.m.
Who's
Eastern
injured,
time
who's
slot
not.
With on ABC after Sixers Knicks on ESPN. I mean, obviously, this is. It's just old news. It's just the team that's played in the NBA Finals for the last 3
obviously,
years.
Obviously, it's just old
our
news.
Modern, our
it's
postmodern
just
day rivalry. Yeah.
Yeah, it's the.
Mm-hmm.
It's you knew. You
and because
knew
the Warriors won the title,
the
that,
finals
would be
hit, that would
State.
Be a Christmas game.
That, too.
That would probably be the marquee Christmas game. Yeah, so it's not unexpected, but it's just who cares? It's, we
the
know
one interesting
we've
thing, we're
enough.
Not going to go into deep analysis about Cavs Warriors because
yeah,
we know it's going to be a marquee
Wizards,
game.
Celtics.
People are going to be watching it. There might be some ramifications from the result. But, you know, they play another time after this. The one thing that's interesting is that this is one of the only times where the Cavs and the Warriors are not first in their conference. Because you got the Celtics with a better record than Cleveland. You got the Rockets with a better record than the Warriors. So maybe there's a little bit of fight between both of them because they know they got some catching up to do. Possibly? You don't think so?
No, not really.
It's not that disparate.
You're
yeah, I agree with that.
Games,
but what I'm saying is that maybe something like that's
really
something to
anything.
Prove nature. You know, Curry, you think Curry will be back in time with the ankle, or do you think they'll sit him again? Yeah, you were just talking about the Wizards and the Celtics.
Want him
you know,
back,
that's your you know Celtics are your team, and you have a good realistic base on you know how the Celtics are. The Tim Frazier return game. That's his, yeah, it's his return game
with Tim Frazier.
But John, you don't
Tim
think John,
starting
well, John Wall
guard.
Just recently
yeah.
came back. Bradley Beal's been on fire, but they haven't been winning games with Beal at the forefront. Now that Wall is back, you know this was a very like. Snippy rivalry last year, and it spilled over into the playoffs too. When they went 7 games, the Celtics won that series. Of course, you expect anything here? Kyrie versus Wall is going to be tight.
No, if mm-hmm. Wall comes back and plays full minutes, he might be on.
Well, it's Westbrook versus Harden. Those that was the you know it's
Rockets,
James Harden
Thunder,
proving to Russell Westbrook,
Thunder.
You took the MVP from me. This is my turn now. That's going to be the narrative there. But you know the Rockets thing seem to be turning up. The Thunder seem to be turning down, which means that this is the exact same. This is the exact right time for the Thunder to win a game. Yeah. The one thing interesting about Rockets Thunder, just to go back, is that that is at 8 o'clock Eastern time, but that's going to be on ABC because that's a Monday night. So ABC didn't really have anything there for a Monday night time slot. So they said, okay, why don't we just put it on prime time on network television? So we're going to have that game instead of it being on TNT for the prime time slot, which is what normally happens, you know, when it comes to Christmas Day, but because of the day of the week, it just kind of like, it just fell differently. And then, like you said, the poo-poo platter at the end, you got Timberwolves at Lakers because you need a West Coast team, and the Warriors already had their spot taken earlier in the day with the Cavaliers game. I mean, are you expecting anything there with the Lakers and the Timberwolves? No defense. You know what's surprising is that the Lakers are actually an efficient defense. You know, whereas already talked about all the issues that the Wolves have defensively. So, is there a possibility maybe some high scoring?
Who knows?
You can't tell me nothing. I ain't know. I already seen.
It's the NBA, it's all high scoring now.
I wouldn't call it an epidemic, but it's to the point where, like, if you can't get to 115 points in a game, you're probably going to lose, you know, unless you're successful at just dragging the pace of the game down into a rock fight. You know, that's the only way. Like the other team just shoots so poorly that you could scratch out 93 to 95 points and still win the game. But you got to get to 100. Now we're going to be able to go to our Christmas gifts. I know you enjoy, doing these annual gifts. I know you just want to throw out coal to everybody, but we're going to save the coal at the end because we love to do.
You know, last year, I believe I gave out a lot of good
How
gifts.
Expensive
it wasn't
is
all coal?
Like people make it out like, oh,
I
think
just
I
was
gave
very
you coal because I found it on the street.
Last year, if I recall.
You know, coal's not hard. That is a very expensive fossil fuel. Well, where are you going to find it? On a train track?
No, it's not expensive.
That's charcoal.
Supermarket?
Well, it's charcoal.
Okay. Now, what's the second syllable of that word you just said?
Not Adam Cole.
Cole.
Not
Mason.
Not Norris Cole. You want to give anybody Norris? I mean, Norris Cole's available.
Nope. Just.
Well, they all do, don't they?
We're going
to save the coal for the end. I don't care how much it costs, but we're going to have to save it for the end because we have a lot of gifts to give out, some of them in different varieties, some negative, some positive. It all kind of goes in different places. I want to start with this one. This is the elf on the shelf. I don't want to call this the MVP, like a Christmas type of avatar for MVP, but this is for – because the elf on the shelf is one of those things where, like, if you do it, I mean, you got to be committed to it around the house. Like, you got to do it every day. You got to get creative. You got to go on Pinterest and figure out, oh, okay, what do I have to do with them this day? I know, man, I'm really tired. It's 10:30. Oh, let me try to figure out another way to do this. Well, this is like the award for somebody, for the performer that just is, no matter how bad things look and no matter how tired they are, they just – day in and day out, they're just putting in all the work. It could be a superstar, it could be a coach, it could be a team even. And so, Adam, for the Elf on the Shelf Award, who would you give that gift to? Who has been the Elf on the Shelf in the NBA? Mine is LeBron James. Because
I honestly do not remember. That is why I did not pick one, because I agreed with you. That is why I had a complete mental block right there. I'm like, I don't
remember
picking
one. Well, it's not just the regular season statistics and the lack of
your
DNPs.
Choice was so
it's
obvious,
just that
there's no other.
It's the effort. The effort is where it just always shows for me with LeBron James. Like every Cavaliers game, even when they were, you know, dropping games early, then they go on that big time winning streak where it got up to like into the teens. Like, it just, like, he puts in the work, Adam. Like, and I know there are other guys out there that have been doing very similar things for their teams. You know, James Harden, a lot of people feel like he's doing like a big, like, way too many minutes because he's sort of on an MVP chase, and he's trying to, like, stay, you know, trying to stay ahead of LeBron James. And then Russell Westbrook, who won the MVP, averaged the triple-double, because we got to count 2017, like, the tail end of the regular season last year into this whole debate. But, I mean, is there any other, like, kind of candidates that you thought about?
Well, Here's the negative elf on the shelf. Just like, why don't you just go the fuck away? I'm sick of you. That would just have to be the Timberwolves. Like, you have a bench.
That Thibodeau's this holding is them back.
Like, we're getting to the point where I'm beginning to think
he brought in Taj Gibson. He brought in Jimmy Butler. He wanted to do the Timberwolves.
Yeah, because he brought in Taj Gibson. He brought in Crawford, but
like
then won't play
off
because
the cliff.
The
and I don't think it's 100%
his fault. Muhammad, who started last year, now he's in the bench. So. Yeah, it's just, well, here's my starters. My starters will play 40 minutes. Like, no, you can't. No,
okay,
you can't,
but you
got to
remember if you touch
fine,
the elf,
42 minutes.
Magic.
No, that's even worse.
Is the Magic lost with the Minnesota Timberwolves, or you feel like they can find it again?
You know, they're
but okay, but for LeBron James, you feel like
them,
that's an apt
just,
choice.
They don't,
you know, just
good.
Let me ask you this. Do you feel like with LeBron James, do you watch a little bit of lackadaisical, or do you feel like he's pushing harder because he knows he's waiting for Isaiah Thomas to come back and Derrick Rose took his little why me sabbatical? But do you feel like LeBron's sort of been pushing harder? Yeah.
Well, he's pushing hard because he thinks he has to. He is the team. When Isaiah comes back, he'll have a game.
Yeah, but that's
to,
why he's a great leader.
Okay,
you put the right phrase in there.
It's LeBron's
thinks
team.
He
it's
has
LeBron's
to.
World.
He doesn't necessarily have to. I feel like he's got enough people there behind him right now with the current roster to probably still win games if he just kind of pushes the right buttons here and there. But he's just been leading by example by just playing fantastic basketball. Russell Westbrook, he's always been in a polarizing topic because, yes, he puts out incredible numbers. He's a fantasy god. He won the MVP. But the efficiency for the team as a whole, like, is the team better because of him? The answer overall is yes, but does he make his teammates better? I don't necessarily think the answer there is yes. You get what I'm saying? I mean, it's hard. I love Russell Westbrook, and I think he does make the Thunder better than they were. Without him, they would be trash. But I just wonder if if he had adjusted his game a little bit, dialed back a little bit, maybe the team would be better off because of it. You know, I would if I were them, and I know they're not going to do this. I would actually give probably more play to Paul George. I would let Paul George kind of do more of the alpha male stuff. But that's not how the team is. It's just not going to happen. Yeah, you're, let's go ahead with this one. I like this one. This is the gift card. Everybody gets the gift card. Now, the gift card's cool because, like, you just tell them, hey, what store do you like to go to? Oh, I like this place. I like shopping here. Okay, I'll give you, like, a $50 gift card. It's like the gift that you give to somebody, but you don't really know what they want. You just let them pick it out for themselves. So it's more like a figurative gift. For me, I picked the Dallas Mavericks with their cap space because – they're 8-22. Their season's lost. Would you agree there, or do you think there's any hope? I mean, the Miami Heat almost came back from 11-30 last year, but I don't see it with Dallas.
They're done.
But even with Dirk Nowitzki wanting to come back next year, which he's been quoted as saying recently, I still think with that cap space, that Mark Cuban might be able to just snag in like at least one really, really good free agent. And I feel like I don't think he's tanking. I think he's just sort of biding his time. Yeah, well, they got Dennis Smith in the draft.
Well, that's why they didn't pick up anybody this year. You got Dennis Smith draft. You got Max Kleber, who's
doing
starting.
Okay.
Because from Germany on a cheap deal, but Yogi's just he's a third string where he should be. And you know, again, if you're relying on Seth Curry to be your
what did you have for
guy,
the gift card? Who did you want to give it out to?
It's sort of, well, good luck with that. think my gift card I give to the Sacramento Kings because they still don't know what they want to be. Here's our overpriced aging veterans. Here's our young hotshot rookie. Here's our most expensive European import ever. We don't know what you kind of want, so here's just a.
But didn't they do that? Didn't they get the gift card last year and sort of spent it out on George Hill and Zach Randolph?
Lineup?
I know Zach Randolph had that terrific flashback game against the Pelicans where – did you hear the quote? He was like – he was caught on camera telling Boogie Cousins – where I'm from, bullies get bullied. Is that what he said? I'm going to have to find it for you and send it. But supposedly there was a video where he was caught saying the Boogie on the court, from where I'm from, bullies get bullied, which is like the most Zeebo thing I've ever heard. But yeah, he had a turn back time type of performance with the Kings getting a lot more minutes. But then they'll have some stretches where he's like non-existent, you know? And George Hill, Todd Weber, our place to be nation's own Todd Weber, he wants George Hill gone. Sacramento has already turned on George Hill.
And rightfully so. It's
The Ghost of Christmas Past. I mean, this one.
Like I said, there's your gift card.
This one is pretty self-explanatory, so we're going to hit it. For me, I have the potential elimination of the one-and-done rule, not because I think it's necessarily a bad idea, but there were definitely ramifications from having the straight from high school to pro system in place where it really got out of hand, and that's why they closed the door. And I just don't want to see – I know there's more reservations in place. There's expanded lineups. There's a G League that you can use as a feeder system. The good ones will immediately get elevated up, while the ones who are not so good that come out of high school can take their time to develop. But when it comes to, you know, when it comes to this, I just feel like there might be just a better option than just letting people go straight out of high school again.
Well, the whole thing is just, I think, to feed their G League. That's the reason. But look what's really happened with this one-and-done rule. There's every year there's a record amount of freshmen who wind up leaving, and then most of them are terrible. And then, you know, let's just – where is James Young?
But I will say where this. I'm is, not really big on you know, the education Zimmerman, part because Diamond I know that's Stone. Not what they're there
where
for.
Are they?
What I'm
they're...
big on is that some of those players that think that – they're good enough when they get out of high school, when they go play their freshman year and they get overhyped and then they hit the reality of, wait, maybe I'm not that good yet. Maybe I need to season myself up or my stock is not high enough because it sort of crashed when I went to college. Maybe I need to go back another year and try to get better. And then they start to kind of like get into the NCAA system where it's like, okay, I need to play out my career until I can like boost my stock, you know, like it's like a proving ground, you know, whereas if you go straight out of high school, and that was a big problem. And this is why I'm sort of forewarning this is that you don't want too many Deshaun Stevensons. You don't want too many Leon Smiths where like they just come in and they're just not even remotely close to ready, you know? Yeah,
well,
and I know there's different systems in place for everything, but this would be a new thing. It would be a new thing all over again. We are more than 10 years removed from this. So, like, people are acting like, oh, well, we have preparations for these kids because we have to deal with so many young kids being one-and-doners now. Sure, it's just a year removed, but that year is a big step. You know, that's playing that year in college, to me, it is a big step. Would you agree with that?
Well, yeah, that's the big game in, you know, learning how to win, sort of, because high school and that doesn't –
like, what if Romeo Langford just went straight to the NBA?
Kids who are, you know,
would he be any – would he be more ready or just as ready as he would be if he played a year at wherever it would be, like Kentucky or Indiana or wherever?
Well, just look at any of them now. Look at the – yeah, just look at the freshman class. Like, how much of them would have been,
and then there's the Marvin Bagley
from high school,
and
like,
then there's the Anthony Davis, where you're just like, holy shit, that guy can play in the NBA right now, you know?
But they're all going to come out because they're all going to think they're going to be good. And then all of a sudden, okay, here's your first round contract.
And it's not, it's not breaking news that you put you could put a one and done on a guaranteed, first round contract and do a send down. We just saw that with, didn't we just see that with the Kings with Scott Labissiere? And Labissiere like absolutely tore up the G League for a couple games. So it's not new that first rounders get sent down. Some of those players might react differently, but it's not a bad thing. It's not a demotion. I know some people treat it as such.
Well, that's the thing. Even like, look, he's a good case of one and done. Well, he would have been, a top five pick if he were coming out of high school. Harry Giles would be a top five pick. Well, what did he do? What did either of them do in college? Absolutely nothing. Oh, well, they still got picked, so it didn't mean anything.
Which
so
goes to Chris's past that you have.
Them coming out in high school or them doing nothing for 1 year and coming out anyways.
Oh, man.
That would be Doc Rivers with the...
Well, no, judging from how the Celtics bounce back, you're telling me that the Clippers are going to be so much better when Doc Rivers is eventually fired. Is that what you're trying to say?
Once he gets fired, you can now break up the team and then
I got
to
throw some shine to Lou Williams. He's been playing out of his
mind. You have no choice but to build around Blake Griffin, so... But he's Lou Williams. That's what he's going to do. He's just going to shoot...
Do you trade him now?
20 shots, 10 threes a game, so...
He's become the new Jimmy Jackson.
Because you think
where it's like, he's good, but he's not the long-term guy here, so let's move him again.
It's Lou's only getting time just because of the way the injuries are, and then, again, every time we say, once you have to rely
under the
on
mistletoe,
Austin Rivers to do anything.
I don't think you and I are going to go under the
problem.
Mistletoe. We've enjoyed our time. For me, I kind of went back and forth, but I went more on the macro sense with this one. I have the NBA in high scoring. I mean, we all know why this has been just a long, long, program type of or initiative type of thing where they've been letting people getting away with more moving screens and a lot more spread ball, a lot more of the three, a lot more of the high pick and rolls that opens up the court, and they've put in all these rules so that scoring would be easier. Like for just even a small thing, like the fact that you can, when you take a timeout, you can take the ball at half court off after a timeout after a made basket from under your own, and that little bit helps to be able to get a basket instead of having to go across the court to try to get a basket. Things like that. But it's gotten to the point now, I believe, where I've felt this way for a couple of years, but now it's official where it's like, if you can't average about 105 points per game, you're not a relevant NBA team. Is that fair to say? Like, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I want to know how many teams average less than 100 points or less than 105 points per game, and I want to know if they're legitimate or not. That's a very rare example because of their defensive efficiency.
Well, that would be Spurs.
One of the rare ones. Utah Jazz, maybe. Atlanta's not a legitimate NBA team. They're trash.
Atlanta, because they don't have enough people to...
that was a shot across the bow, huh?
Well.
Why is that? Are you looking at the stats right now too?
Fair enough.
I'm gonna have to chase him down.
No.
I'll give you the teams that have less than 105 points per game. It's about half the league. Okay. This is under 105. Knicks, Bucks, Hornets, Clippers, the Boston Celtics at 103, Hawks, Jazz, Blazers, Pistons, Thunder, Spurs, Heat, Mavericks, Bulls, Grizzlies, Kings. So I'll adjust that to under 100. The ones that are under 100 are Dallas, Chicago, Memphis, and Sacramento. But, I mean, what I'm trying to say is just are we at a point where scoring is just the end-all, be-all in the regular season? Now, defense wins in the playoffs, but in the regular season, you got to be able to rack up some points.
Yes. And then, you know, based upon that, the only two teams who are
And that's it.
giving up under 100 points are San Antonio and Boston. That's it. The only two teams giving up under 100. So yeah, scoring does come out. But as for me, my just gift that keeps on giving, it would be the rookies. And because after last year's overhyped, these guys are all great, and then none of them played, all of them sucked. Now we're having a renaissance of we
I
have
mean, are you just
a
like
good
overly
plethora
impressed
of
by
young
the rookie
players who are
class,
actually doing
or
something.
is this something where it's been a changing of the mindset of how many minutes you give to your rookies and your second year players?
Well, it's
Yeah,
a
you can't
changing
play
of just,
yet.
I guess, the NBA's mindset. Because last year, it seemed like everybody was on a minutes restriction.
Is there one
This
rookie
year,
other? I mean, Simmons is a
this
big
year, it's
one,
just they're
Tatum
like,
with the
well,
Celtics.
just
Is there one
go
in
and do it.
particular that's just like impressed you like beyond compare? Not well. What do you like about Tatum?
That would just be Simmons.
But he was a born scorer. I
The
think people
fact that
saw
he
that
did none of that in
immediately.
college. And everyone is completely surprised by it. Yeah, but everybody thought he was just like a mid-range like Carmelo score, not a, oh, he can shoot the three, he could do all this. He has
And
a
even the
deceptive
smaller
first
ones like,
step.
you know,
He's super
Lauri Markkanen
smart.
with
It's
the Bulls. We'll
like
see what happens with
nobody
him now that
expected that to
Mirotic is
happen.
back. You know, I'm almost convinced that his minutes are going to start to shrink a little bit. I'm drawing a little bit of a blank. I know there's a variety of them that have been very, very, very good that have been playing in rookie minutes, but it's been an impressive little stretch there for the rookies. But is it better than the one from 2015 when we had Towns and Porzingis kind of at the lead? Ooh, well, Okafor had good numbers,
Well, who
but
else was
I think
behind them? That was it. It was a
everybody
two-horse
knew pretty
race.
quickly this wasn't gonna last. Like they weren't believers, you know.
Well, yeah, because you had him paired with Noel, who's just like, well, we
Miles
know that
Turner, I
can't
remember, was
work,
in that
so
draft.
somebody's gonna,
So
okay, yeah, you got your
that
points,
would be
but
one
we
of the
know you
ones that he
can't,
would
you're
have
not
to
a
pick out
long-term
there. So,
solution.
yeah, a little bit, a lot more depth than this one for sure. The next one here, let's go with stocking stuffers. Just, I mean, you don't have like a big president in mind, but you got these little ones that you're like, oh, he would like this, and oh, he would like this, and then you just kind of put it in there. Like, what team would you give that to? Where it just seems like they have a lot of smaller pieces at work, but the big picture's not there yet. Okay.
The disappointing stocking stuffer would have to be the Heat. That's just, well, we, you know, hey, your gifts are all in there.
Yeah,
Well,
and
but
in
it's not
free
where's
agency,
the big
they
gift?
double down
Well,
on
we
it.
just
That's
got
the
all these
one problem
mid-level
there that
guys
a
who
lot of people
are,
are
well, they're
disappointed
there.
with. Okay.
No, stocking stuffers, I would think, I would just give to the Raptors. Because they've sort of changed up their style
The
from
thing that
last
was
year, and
interesting
they
about the
are,
Raptors
although
to
they're
start
boring
the
and nobody
season
cares about
was
them,
that they were still
they're
winning
still
games, but
good.
Lowry was off to a miserable start. Now he's starting to pick it up again. DeRozan has just become the alpha male of the team. Is that fair to say? I know that a lot of people feel like veteran point guards that are still at an all-star or like near an all-star level, like Lowry is,
Yeah.
are like considered like the automatic leaders of their team. Like Kyrie Irving is the leader of the Boston Celtics. But with the Raptors, it's definitely DeRozan. Is that fair?
Yeah, and that's like I said, it was because it was Lowry's team the last few years, and then that change, it was sort of one of those, okay, Toronto hit the glass ceiling, there's nothing but down for them. They have to now start selling their pieces off because they're at the cap, and then I
Yeah,
think
their
it's a
guard play is always
respectable,
thin,
you know,
especially after the
little things
DeLon
they've
Wright
done, little
injury. But then
changes
you got,
and
you know,
tweaks to keep themselves
Pirtle and
relevant.
Siakam do that, like, or is it Siakam or Siakam? I never get it right. They kind of do like a tag team as the backup behind Valanciunas.
Potato,
Valanciunas has been
potato.
just very steady. And then Serge Ibaka has not fallen off a cliff yet. That's the other important thing with the Raptors is that they put that money in to keep Ibaka, and he hasn't been just a complete and abject disappointment, you know, which some people were expecting, because when you have those super athletic centers that do the block shots and, you know, do all the athletic stuff, you're immediately thinking, okay, when is it all going to end? And with Ibaka, we're not there yet. He's still pretty good. Okay, this one was your idea. The Sox.
Yep, he's still hanging in there.
The Sox is just the term for the gift that where you're expecting something good, and then you got like a shirt or a polo. Yeah. Now socks
here's
are great.
Shirt. Here's
we all
a
need
pair
to wear them.
Underwear.
Everyone likes a good
like,
polo.
Come on,
when,
Mom.
You know, when you have to go out somewhere, but it's not the one that you're really thinking about in the back of your mind when it's like, man, I'd really, really like to have that. Oh, here's a pair of socks. So who would be getting the socks this year?
Well, there's two people. One would be Nerlens Noel, who
and now they're
know,
going
well documented.
I'll go through the
fall.
Cliff Notes of it. Is that
hard?
They
hard
had,
fall.
I believe, it was a 5-year, $70 million. Am I saying that? Am I saying the years and number in the money right? Offer sheet on the table because he was an RFA coming off his rookie contract.
So. Yeah, they had
his original agent declined it because they thought they could get a better offer sheet. It never came. And he fired the agent, hired Rich Paul, and immediately signed the tender. Well, now there's been a lot of back and forth about him being a malcontent in Dallas. He's not happy there. And then he gets this weird injury where Rick Carlisle has been quoted saying he's going to be out for quite a while. So now you're starting to think, okay, are they just trying to push him out or put him on the shelf so that they can trade him, you know, so that they don't have to worry about his unrestricted free agency?
Yep, and, you know, he bet on himself. And
but that's where the malcontent comes in. His complaint is that he hasn't gotten the opportunities. He hasn't gotten the
minutes. Your socks, and then as opposed to just, you know, being working hard. And the other one would be George Hill. Who,
smart by George Hill. He just hit his 30s.
He took the cash grab to go
there. I would
take
the money, too.
He shouldn't be, you know. Yeah, he's 31, 32. He took a 3-year, $30 million deal. And then all of a sudden, wow, this team's terrible. They told me they would be good. And you believe that? You know, you think they're going to be a contender with a 36-year-old Zach Randolph and a 55-year-old Vince Carter? You think that's going to put this team of just rookies who are last place on top?
Mine is Boogie Cousins.
Like, what
and
do you, you know?
Here's why I say
there's
that.
Your underwear. There's your socks.
Is he on a more relevant team than the Kings were last year or the year before that? Yes, because the Pelicans with Boogie and with Anthony Davis kind of lead and Drew Holiday, who's been getting some crazy scoring nights lately. With them leading the way, they're like right around 500, just over. But when it comes to Boogie, like how much better off are you? Like where are you at in your career? If you make the playoffs, you're probably going to lose in the first round anyway. But you do get in the playoffs, but you're not really proving that much. And then you're a free agent. So what do you do now? Do you consider trying to demand another trade, which would make you look awful because it looks like you've asked out of two different teams in 2 years? Or do you just re-sign because you like playing with AD? Like, I feel like he's between a rock and a hard place, but I feel like also he's put himself there.
Well, he put himself there, but the first one was sort of like the Kevin Garnett Minnesota thing. It was terrible. It wasn't working. He tried to make it work. He kept saying, okay, I'll give you one more chance. And then it's just like, look, I need to get the fuck out. And,
yes.
And New Orleans,
now,
unfortunately,
they're
you know, their midseason injury form
they're already
happened
had, like,
early.
Their,
so
their reservations kicked in. I actually saw an Omer Asik sighting. It was unbelievable. It was like watching a gazelle in full flight. I will say this for DeMarcus Cousins, though. Because I don't want this to be completely negative on him, because a lot of people like to pile on Boogie. He was a sneaky dark horse for me for Elf on the Shelf. That man works and plays hard every freaking day.
He plays hard, and it looks like he's having fun where he is. He doesn't appear to have that you know, like this time last year, he'd already have like 13 technicals. He already would have been kicked out of games. He already been throwing stuff at the coach. It seems like he's having a good time.
Okay,
where he
we're
going
to start
just,
to kind of rattle
it's
off
kind
as
of
we
hard
get to
if you're
the big two gifts at the end.
Hot
team. Toy. Mine, return games. I am just tired of them. Player movement, as we talked about in the show throughout the years, and absolutely it was rampant in this past offseason, as documented. Player movement happens. You know, you're going to have players that just are either not happy with the team or the team's not happy with them, or they feel like they have there's a missing piece, so they have to empty the shelf in order to bring them in. You're going to have even stars, even superstar players wind up getting moved. It happens. But I am just tired of this ad nauseum of, oh, Carmelo's going back to the Garden. Oh, Kevin Durant's back at OKC for the second time. I'm fine. And then, you know, we saw with Kyrie Irving going back to Cleveland for opening night, which was, you know, nice, sexy, like primetime game. You know, unfortunately, it's remembered for a different reason. But I am just tired of the avalanche of it. And also the minutia of it. Like, oh, this is Lou Williams' return game. Well, Lou Williams has played for five different teams. Every game's a return game for Lou Williams. Like, at what point is it like, okay, it's fine. He played here. It's over. Move on.
That's just mostly storyline for the sake of storyline. I agree. I will agree with you where that's just the, it's the NBA of the we need to have a storyline for each story. It's Al Horford's second time back. No, he's been in Boston for 2 years. This is long gone. The only one that matters is the first time back. How is the crowd going to react? Nobody cares from now on. All the assholes.
The only time I ever
Oklahoma
saw
City
it like
who are booing
this season
Durant
so far,
2 years, like get over
tangibly
yourselves.
Affect a performance was probably Paul George in Indiana. I don't know if you watched that one, but George looked out of it. Like it was almost like he didn't want to play. Is that fair to say? The booze.
Well, because he didn't expect. He thought he was doing the right thing. He's like, "Look, I don't want to. I'm going to go on, but I'll give you a year to do something, as opposed to I'm going to be part of rumors, It was, you know, the knee jerk reaction of the GM who just said, "Oh, I'll trade you here, ha ha ha." Mm-hmm. You know, and it's one of those, well, Oladipo, we always knew could score.
And don't
it's
forget,
just,
Victor Oladipo,
you know, because he scored 20 in Orlando. It's just we didn't know he could be who he was.
What's your hot toy this year?
Don't forget the Orlando. What's he probably has a return game in Orlando still.
You know, the other one I was thinking of is the malcontent.
Did I agree with you,
culture.
Or did I?
This idea of, oh, we can save this player. That's another one that I've been hearing a lot of for the last couple of months. It's because right now we're at that point where contracts are tradable. I think it just passed where contracts that have been signed in the offseason are tradable. So people are just immediately thinking of, oh, who can we move now? You know, it's like you just signed there, you know, and now you want to go? So,
yeah, how can we get out of it? How can we get out of this mistake, and how do we – it's going to be, you know, again, that just seems to be more storyline-driven than anything else. Because this year and next year will be – you know, next year will still be sitting down. But 2 years from now, when all those horrible 2016 deals are expiring contracts,
you gotta fill up the gas
that'll thing. Be the free agent, you know, frenzy. But now it's just everybody has too many years left on their deal, and you're just going to swap out parts for other parts. And it seems like, well, what could they get for this Boogie? You know, what could they get for Boogie? And George Hill, what can they get for him? And Jeff
Teague. And it's
Teague.
Not breaking
it's like, well,
news
Jeff
that it's
not leaving,
a
so why
player,
are we,
even a good
why
one
is he even
who signed a contract in the
offseason
is traded. Then I mean, we always talk about that with Nene, with the Nuggets. Like, he was immediately traded after signing that contract with the Nuggets. Like, that's the point. Sometimes you sign these contracts because you want them to be tradable contracts. If you sign them to a value that's way overblown and you can't move it like Kenneth Faried, then you're in trouble. That's when you start to sort of isolate yourself. Let's go now with the Scrooge, a bah humbug here. Who gets your bah humbug gift? Okay. Does he get the lump of coal,
that
too?
Would have to just go to straight up LeVar Ball. He gets just, well, I was going to give him the lump of coal, but he'd be like, yo, I could turn that to diamonds and big baller brand coal. And yeah, he just gets just not with what he's done with, you know, the Lakers and undermined that team. It's just he's taken his 16-year-old kid who, you know, when you're 16, I got my friends, I got, you know, all this. Okay, now I'm going to send you halfway across the world.
No, it's
just you and your brother with people who don't speak
English.
On,
I believe it's Robert Parra. Is that his name, the owner? I'm not trying to poo-poo on, like, the main brass with the Memphis Grizzlies. We always talked about how delicate their situation was, and if it was one of those things where they had central casting, and if you plucked out one part of that nucleus, things were going to fall apart. Well, Tony Allen left. Zach Randolph left. And then you got the double whammy of Marc Gasol being unhappy and then Mike Conley getting hurt. And it all sort of fell apart from there, and they fired David Fizdale. It's the second firing for the Memphis Grizzlies in the last 2.5 seasons. So it's very worrying when it comes to not only the fan base, because there's also issues with potential relocation or buying out or the owner being bought out. But you just worry about the team in general, because this season is over. The Memphis Grizzlies season is over.
What? And that's the thing, is that they could also be a lump of coal candidate, because you have to know the layout, the land of the NBA. You have teams in the upswing. Your team was so old. I give them credit. You're putting all your eggs in Denyatta Davis and Ivan Rabb and Dylan Brooks there and Kobe Simmons in the G League. You have young players that you didn't have a year or two ago. You just need to know when to rebuild. Look at Atlanta. You have this team, we're on fire,
Yeah, look, I agree with you. I think you were harping on that Atlanta for a very long time. Even when they were like a 60-win team, it's like, yeah, but this came too early. You need to pull the plug. When the moment things go sour, which was right after 2016, you got to pull the plug. And they did the right thing by pulling the plug. With Memphis, they're pulling the plug after the car accident's already happened, if that makes any sense. You know, it's like, oh, now you're giving up. Now you're going to give up now that you don't have any assets. Now we're going to go to our main ones. Santa came early. Mine's easy. It's Chris Paul getting traded to the Rockets. It's because Chris Paul had a year left on his deal, and he could have done the opt out, and the Rockets may not have been able to get him in free agency, or they wouldn't have been able to fit as many contracts into their roster. If they had to just take on a new contract from Chris Paul at max value. Instead, he opted in, allowed the trade to happen, and even though the Rockets gave away assets, they were still able to fit in Paul and move in some other pieces that they liked and not have to move other big contracts like Eric Gordon and Ryan Anderson. And now you're looking at the Rockets team that we have because Chris Paul gave back.
Yep, and I would also Celtics and Kyrie, because I was talking with somebody at work, and it's like, should we feel bad for not feeling bad about Isaiah Thomas getting traded? Because he did, again, everything you possibly could do. He went above and beyond, and all of a sudden, oh, wait, no, Kyrie
that
really is better
than
him.
The conference finals, though. I know he was injured with the hip, but, I mean, that was sort of proven guilty already, right, that Kyrie Irving was a better point guard than Isaiah Thomas.
Yeah, but again, just under the big thumb of on Team LeBron, there's only so much he was allowed to do, and all of a sudden now it's just like, oh,
it's like having two dads.
You feel guilty because he did
like,
everything
I love my dad,
right,
but
and did everything
step,
the right way.
Dad's
and it's
awesome.
Like, okay,
you know, is Kyrie like the stepdad, like the really awesome stepdad, or do you feel like he could be? I mean, the thing about Kyrie is that we're at a point where he sort of sink in his like idea of what the team is about. Like, he's sinking his teeth into it. Like, now this is Kyrie Irving's team. Yeah, we saw this with Carmelo Anthony when
Stoudemire got hurt and he had his MVP run in 2013.
That became Melo's team. He ran that show. And the byproduct of that was the team being Melo's team for like a good 4 years, even after he was in past his prime. You know, I don't think Kyrie Irving is even like – I think Kyrie Irving might be in his prime right now. So it's perfect timing for him, but – you know, I'm not trying to worry about when Gordon Hayward comes back because he's already out of his walking boot, reportedly. But when he comes back, I don't think he's going to be the leader. I think Kyrie Irving already took the reins. Santa came late. For me, it's very obvious. Yep. It's the 76ers with Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid. It's the delayed gratification. It's the one where, you know, you tell your son – so I just didn't have the – because you couldn't get the big gift in time, whatever it be, a trip to Disney World or, you know, some, or a car or whatever it might be. Like, look, I don't have a big gift this year, but I promise you I'll get you one later, you know. And then and for the Sixers, it's Simmons and Embiid blossoming together.
I got to go with Milwaukee because they are going all in and they are trying – hard to go all in, and
but is why is that why is that
got their roster up to go all in this year for some reason? Because when they started the year of, well, this team has potential, you know, Giannis will take them somewhere, then okay, we need to add Bledsoe. Now you hear big rumors, you hear like, you know, Boogie Cousins, if you go, oh, Milwaukee's a landing spot for Milwaukee's still somehow a landing spot for all these potential trades going on.
Yeah, I'll say this, though, for Milwaukee. They're in much better shape than some of these other ones we're talking, like the stocking stuffers with the Kings and with the Minnesota Timberwolves. Like, I feel like Milwaukee's in much better shape. Would you agree? They got more pieces in place to mess with. Regift.
Yeah.
You got one yet? With the player movement, everything's a regift now.
So. I guess you could go with the player movement, but I will say I will get his name. Was it Darius Miller for the Pelicans and Shane Larkin for the Celtics? Of just these guys were out of the league completely, like not G League, not like they were just toiling in Europe and China, and then all of a sudden. They came back, and it's a good story that
yeah. But that moment's fleeting. You know, look at Sean Kilpatrick.
You were like this.
The Brooklyn Nets were in on him, and then like, they made the Okafor trade by Sean Kilpatrick. You're back on the street. I mean, it's very fleeting.
That was
like the like. How about I give you another
still one? That
why
everybody
did the Lakers
like,
let David Nwaba go, and he just walked to the Chicago Bulls off of waivers, and now he's contributing? Why did you even let him go?
Well, you had Lonzo Ball, and we don't need anybody else.
Well,
we have Lonzo Ball and
big.
Jordan Clarkson.
That's the thing.
We don't need a third string developmental point guard.
you brought in Brook Lopez in the trade.
Okay,
you know,
strike that. We have Kyle Kuzma. We have Brandon Ingram. We they have so many young people.
My
regift
is the Indiana Pacers with Victor Oladipo.
What
a perfect marriage. This would have been under the mistletoe too. What a perfect marriage this is. I'm not trying to say like Victor Oladipo is a super. He might be an all-star. Would you say that he's kind of sneaking in there? But just very efficient
well,
year
really,
scoring
who's
is
left.
Through the roof.
Everybody's sort of
he's
been
won
some
games almost single-handedly down the stretch for. An Indiana team that's just completely different now that Paul George is gone, of course. And they're competitive. I don't know if they can hang in there. It's like, you remember when Devin Harris was with the New Jersey Nets when they traded him for Jason Kidd? And they had that 1 year where Harris was just doing it all, and they weren't bad, but they weren't – but they, yep. they just – they could not hit, like, the next niche to be a playoff team. Like, I feel like that's Indiana's destiny, but I'm very glad for Oladipo because I thought in Orlando he was terribly out of position, and then with Oklahoma City he got paid, but you're Russ's sidekick, you know, and now he's sort of blossomed as the main guy there. So I'm glad that Oladipo after a second trade was able to kind of go back to where he went to college and has played very well for an upstart Pacers team. Okay, we got to go. This is the second biggest one. The lump of coal. Yeah. Who gets the lump of coal from Adam Murray?
The lump of coal I will just give to... I still got to give it just to Lakers fans. Who, the ones who are like, well, we're going to get LeBron and Paul George next year. Yeah, we got all these rookies who are awesome, but we're going to get LeBron and Paul George.
The Laker fans are just using the Christmas spirit. The Christmas spirit is to dream the undreamable, think the impossible.
Mm-hmm. But you're not looking at the toys you have because I want that shinier toy. Yo, but you got all these toys for Christmas. You got Kuzma, who nobody got him but you. You're the only kid in the block who has this Kyle Kuzma, and you have a Lonzo Ball. You have a Julius Randle. No, I don't want my Julius Randle. I need to get rid of him. He's horrible.
Because
they don't
just
know the potential
about,
their team has. Is this similar
to like the Knicks when they thought they could get LeBron in 2010? Here's the problem with that. You're going to get a toy, but do you really want it to be Amari Stoudemire past his prime? Like, is that what the Lakers could get?
Yeah, it's like that. It's like the Kings the Suns, when they all just started gutting out their rosters and carving out space for somebody who had with no intention of coming. So the fans who are like, it's going to happen, like, well,
My lump of coal goes to the Pacific Division. I got to give it to Robert Sarver, the owner of the Suns. I mean, I have a myriad of problems with Robert Sarver and the way that organization's been run. But the main thing that bothers me is the idea that he's trying to react to the tanking when the truth was he was the one who started the tanking in the first place. So this idea he's trying to retcon things is that he's not retconning anything. He's just trying to fix the same mistakes he already made.
Well, that's just sort of bad PR. It is like, oh, I didn't know this was happening. But again, how much do you have?
Yeah,
to
but
give
here's
to
the thing. There's
much,
so, there's been so much because of the fact that they had some very they've had a small string of success under Jay Triano taking over. There's been so much lump of coal being thrown at Earl Watson. That Earl Watson just was a terrible coach. He was the reason why we've been bad. Now that we have a coach who's had head coaching experience, now we're actually starting to pick up some steam. But the truth is the Suns are still god awful. You know.
The Suns are god awful. They do not
Josh
have a starting
Jackson,
point guard.
Dude,
you spent your two lottery picks last year on players who play the same position. Mm-hmm. You started Josh Jackson at the four this year with Earl Watson.
And you have Alex Len and Tyson
Chandler. Okay, we'll get Monroe. And then just give. Yeah, and you're just
waiting
out your year.
But now Devin Booker's a star.
This roster is put up terribly.
He could shoot for 50, you know, in a night. But a lot of people will say, yeah, but he's a looter and a riot. He's just getting those numbers because he's on a bad team. So. Yeah, and you know, I feel like that's Devin Booker's destiny. He's going to have like a couple of these mediocre years on mediocre teams, and then he gets traded to a good team, and all of a sudden he's like the secret weapon type of thing, albeit at a max level payment. All right, and then the greatest gift of all, a lot of people call this the pony, you know, because I want a pony. Well, not everybody gets a pony. Not everybody gets a house when, you know, their family's struggling for Christmas, but sometimes you get the biggest surprise, and then there's the greatest – then people would say the greatest gift of all is like love and affection from your family, but who fucking cares about that stuff? I want a real gift. So – what is the greatest gift of all in the NBA? Who gets it? What gets it? What's Adam Murray's? Okay.
I'm going to give you a quick audible surprise.
And
just say the NBA itself is just the greatest gift of all. Because in this year of everybody going down, every, you know, NFL is at war with each other. You have the NBA who's just having PR, you know, they're doing everything right. They're not, you know, we're going to take all our clips off YouTube. They are being fan friendly. They're being not the spoiled millionaires of other sports.
There was the little hiccup there with the Warriors and the White House visit and the declining. But the thing was that was very quickly fixed up because that vitriol from our great leader, has been sent over to the NFL because of Colin Kaepernick with the protests, and a lot of people were thinking, and here's the thing about the NBA where the schedule worked in their favor. All of that sort of busted out on the NFL early in the year, and the NBA had another month to get themselves ready for, okay, what would be the reaction if our players decided to kneel during the anthem or anything like that? Because we have a lot of because here's the thing, like, the teams run the show in the NFL, the players run the show in the NBA, the superstars. But the thing too is that, and this is very important, is that as outspoken as LeBron James and Steph Curry and a lot of other superstars have been about their criticism of the government and the president and the treatment of black people, Black Lives Matter, the thing is, you have to protect your brand. And it is an important thing to these players. I'm not trying to say that they're forsaking political opinion in order to protect their assets. But you have to put all that into consideration. And the NBA is in the same boat. So they did a very good job of taking all these unique superstars and put them on the same page to say, hey, if you disagree with what's going on in society, that's okay. But there's a forum for that. If you want to do it on Twitter, you can do it on Twitter. If you want to go do it through a nonprofit organization, that's fine. But in the league, within the boundaries, let's just play basketball.
And that's the thing, to just, wrap it up. You had, attack Curry.
Are you going to protest?
Steve Kerr came back and said, yeah, I agree with him. The owner's I back him. And everybody is like, we all agree with each other. Yeah, we have all talked it over as a team. It's not like you have certain, a group of 10 players over here. Some owners are talking to him. Everybody's like, we're going to be on one page. We're just going to play basketball.
When the NFL
we're here
is over,
to be your distraction,
which is in about a month
from
or two.
Everything else.
And then the NBA takes the forefront of like the pop culture sphere. And you know how Donald Trump is. He just has to keep his name in things. Like, do you think that something will pop up that might turn the Pepes, as I call them, onto the NBA?
Of course, he's
going to
start attacking Mark Cuban.
I mean, but
it's going to be him and Mark Cuban.
Yeah, but you're right about Adam Silver. He's just much more progressive.
That's going to be the,
I think the whole league in general is, when it comes to social media, when it comes to media availability, when it comes to their media rights, like you were saying about sharing it through digital. We're in a place now where we could watch G League games on Facebook Live without a problem. Do I want to watch some of those G League games? Of course not. But it's just the fact that it's there, and the fact that they've been able to reach out to a lot of fans and do a whole lot of NBA cares. And I'm not trying to poo-poo on the charity from the NFL or the Major League Baseball, all those other organizations. They do a lot of stuff too. Didn't they just have a news report that came out where the NFL spent millions of dollars long-term on some type of social justice project?
I don't know about that, but they, that whole now the players can, we're going to find players who do this. Okay. Well, now this week you can paint your shoes what you want. Now you can, now that people are all angry, now you can start celebrating. Now that all these
a little too liberated when it comes to the traveling.
I know you would complain about the refs having being too lackadaisical.
Yeah, hanging on the
rim
is almost allowed.
But they've sort of let technicals go. They're not, you're hanging there, you celebrate too much, there's a technical. They're not killing the vibe of the game. The game is entertaining. What was it? Last week when you had the Knicks and the Lakers and you had 5 minutes of just pure insanity where each team was going down hitting every crazy shot. The crowd was going
crazy.
Look
at the Summer League
in
Las Vegas. The atmosphere is great.
That is something you don't see.
You go there and it's like, dude, these games don't matter. And it's like, we don't care. We just enjoy it. You know, All-Star Weekend, like, dude, the difference between the Pro Bowl week, which just feels like a death walk, and, you know, because you're waiting for the Super Bowl, and then All-Star Weekend is just, it's so much more festive. Now, there's a whole lot of other, like, social ticks that people would hit on of why, you know, people enjoy that more than the NFL, and I am not at liberty to get into any of those things because I'm not smart enough.
Well, okay, let's just wrap it up by saying this. Players in the NBA look like they're having fun. When they're off the court, when they're in, you know, doing things,
then,
they look like they want
to
be doing it.
Yours is much better, but mine was just the Celtics building a title contender. And I'm saying this in the vein of, I don't feel like, oh, the Boston, it's not like the Bucks or the Timberwolves where it's like, oh, this team could like contend for an NBA championship if things go right. No, I think the Boston Celtics will win a title in about 2 or 3 years.
Well,
as long as they can max out Kyrie Irving, they're
as
fine.
As long as
that
Golden
team
State
is going to be in
buy
great
their
shape.
Championships, it's theirs. You know, Boston's in great shape.
That's the eggnog hangover, right?
Golden
there.
State, if they want to pay
the
that $300 million
there,
tax bill, there's no reason.
You know, the countdown's on, but that's the problem. Like you were talking about with the Laker fans of like, oh, we're waiting for Superman. We're just going to wait it out and let the team be terrible. Well, that's the whole idea of, oh, we're just going to wait out for the Golden State Warriors to start sucking again. It's like, really? You're not going to put – like, that's why I appreciate the Rockets and the Celtics early on this year. It's like, dude, punch them in the fucking face. Like, put some fight into it, man, you know? So, but that's going to be punching people in the face. That's going to be finishing up our Christmas episode. We got, you know, a big slate of Christmas Day games that we preview for you, and we hope you enjoyed this year. Do you think this is going to wrap it up, or do you think we might be able to sneak one in? You never know. You know. But, all righty. This is Andrew Reach. Merry Christmas.
Know.
Probably Happy New Year. Enjoy everything. We'll see y'all again.